Good morning. We feel far away up here. We were going to sit on stools down there, but we were told this was way more comfortable, and I agree. It is way more comfortable.
I don't know how I like how it feels up here. I don't know.
You'll have to take us as we are. Brielle came to me during worship, and she gave me this little drawing that she had done and written, and it says, "The Lord is my fort where I can enter and be safe. To Uncle Daniel, love, Brielle." Isn't that the best? That is the best. I can just relax now. I am in my fort where I am safe. And nothing else really matters. I think I'm done. No. Not Josh from Kleefeld. Hi, Josh. Is your wife here? Hi, Rosie. Good to see you guys again. Welcome here. Awesome. We're from Kleefeld now. So we take special note of things like this. Awesome to have you. You know, it's really tough to share together. It's kind of amazing, but I have preached a lot, I've taught a lot, and getting a sermon together is nothing compared to sharing together. But you know, there's a reason for that, because what can be accomplished together is amazing compared to what you can do on your own, because there's power in agreement when you come together as husband and wife, when you come together as a church body. And one of the main things that God has put on Christine's in my heart for the church is it's family and home. Oh, we love the family. We love that sense of belonging and being home. And, you know, in Ephesians 3, that famous passage where Paul prays over the church, he prays for the church as a family. He prays for the church as a family. He says that it would be rooted and strengthened in the love of Christ, which surpasses knowledge. It surpasses knowledge. It's actually better than knowledge. Love. It casts out all fear. It's a wonderful thing. And there's a big difference between real family and when family acts as family. Have you ever been to an extended family gathering where everyone's putting on their best because they're coming together? Do you know what I mean? That's not the same as real family. Real family, you know one another. You live with one another day in and day out. And you know those struggles of one another and what goes on behind the scenes. But you belong. You belong. There's no test to pass. You simply belong because you're part of the family. And you're accepted. And you encourage one another. And you work together. And it's beautiful. As we share a bit of our journey this morning, we want to be real. We want you to know that God uses all things for good. All things for good. Even the hardships, even the trials. Don't think a lack of trials and hardships is an indication that you're on the right path. I actually find that path rather suspect. He is with you there. And he's going to use them for good in your life when they're surrendered to him. One of the things that I just want to encourage you with, whatever you may be struggling with, and if you're not struggling with something, you're not human and you're not real, you can go to the extended family gathering over there. No, just kidding. But whatever you are struggling with, I want you to know this morning that you can be happy again. You can be happy again. Something good can and will come from what you're going through. There is purpose. There is purpose in it. There is purpose in pain. Nothing in your life goes wasted when it's surrendered to God. And I want you to know the word hope this morning. Mm-hmm. I hope you know that word.
So I'm going to start off our story. We met in Bible College, Prairie Bible College, in Three Hills, Alberta. I first met Deborah, and then I met her brother Daniel. And the first time I met him, he actually bounced a volleyball on my head. I thought I could play volleyball, but obviously I couldn't. And he was a volleyball player. We were playing just for fun, a bunch of us. And he came and bounced the volleyball on my head. He was flirting with me. After that, we became friends. And then we started dating. But we quickly realized that our goals weren't quite compatible. I had come to Bible school for a year, and then I was going to get on with my life. But when I entered into Bible school, I realized I had some things to work through. And I started counseling. Counseling actually for some abuse and also some eating disorders that I was struggling with. And when Daniel and I were dating, that wasn't quite compatible with his goals. He was ministry driven. He was going for the ministry. I was just trying to get whole again. And there was a counselor and a friend that was at Prairie, Don Masterson. Actually, if you know Steve Masterson, it's his brother. And he actually shared with Daniel something. He said, and this was at one point when we had broken up. He said, even if you have to work as a garbage man for the rest of your life, but you choose to love Christine and lay down your life for her, God will be delighted and proud of you. Daniel shared these words with me, and it actually started the healing in my heart that was broken. I was understanding that my value was no less than going and doing missions, and little did I know, actually, my weakness was valuable. After a few months later, when we graduated, we got married. And we got married in Bemidji in 1993, and we settled in Three Hills for our first year marriage.
We spent about a year in Three Hills, and at this time, my parents and my sister and brother-in-law were here, had gone to Latvia as missionaries right after the Iron Curtain fell over the Soviet Union, and they came back, and they were sharing some of the stories just of what God was doing, and it was just amazing, and I remember Christine came to me one night, and she just looked, and she said, let's go. Daniel, let's go. And that floored me, because that was not where she was at. That was not what we were going to do. And make a long story short, we raised support in 3 or 4 months, and then we were off to Latvia for a short-term mission there, and spent a little less than a year there. And it was an amazing, amazing time in our life. I mean, I've never experienced anything like it. They invited us into public schools to do Bible studies. We were involved in church planting, and I remember sitting in one of these schools teaching the students, and their eyes were as big as saucers. They were just leaning forward, just drinking everything in, and just a hunger and thirst for God. And it was awesome. It was wonderful in so many ways to get to be part of that. At the same time, it was a very difficult season. We were still newly married, still struggling through our relationship, and there was a lot of stress. The living conditions were tough. We were in a foreign country, and I'll just share one little story, one little example. Christine actually, and I think this was partly due to her stress, came down with appendicitis, and we needed to go to the doctor, and so we went to the doctor, and they checked her out, and I brought her into the hospital, and a lot has changed in Latvia since we were there. This was 94. We went in, and it was like going into a World War II hospital movie. There were cats running around in the hallways. It was dirty. There were people bleeding and moaning in the hallways because there wasn't enough room for them. And we're going in here to see the doctor, and they start poking around on Christine and say, sure enough, this thing's ready to burst. We need to do surgery now. And I was like, oh, can we go to Sweden and get that done? And no, it needs to be done now. And a guy comes by in the hallway carrying a coffee pot rigged up with a little apparatus that can hold the needles on the spout where the steam is coming up, and that's how they're disinfecting the needles. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, let's do surgery now. So they wheel her out on a gurney, they take her into this utility elevator. You know, you've seen one of those with the big steel doors. I see you go down in the basement. I thought, this is the last I'm ever going to see of my wife. But anyways, just a little story. There was a lot of stress, but one of the things that it did in our life was we needed God, and we needed him desperately for every day. And I don't think we'd ever been in a position where we needed him so bad. And he met us there, and we experienced him. We experienced his goodness in the midst of that, and we also grew closer to one another through it. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so after our time in Latvia, we moved to Steinbeck. We had no idea what Steinbeck was, what this area was. It was basically 4 hours north of where my parents lived, so within driving distance.
Never met a Mennonite.
No, nope. Had no idea what a Mennonite was. Providence was our goal, so Daniel was going to go get his MDiv there. But after being on the field, we needed to work for a while. So Daniel took a job at Lowen Windows, and I was at the credit union. But there had been a medical issue that we needed to get to the bottom of that had surfaced while we were in Latvia. Over the course of the time there, I had not had my period. And so when we got to Canada, we actually went through a series of tests and doctor appointments at the Heartland Fertility Clinic in Winnipeg. And according to the doctors, they had decided that I was actually going through an early menopause and we would never have children without the use of fertility drugs. So we prayed. And we cried, and we prayed. And God drew near to our broken hearts. And I remember peace, just amazing peace flooding our hearts. We were hurting. We were not going to fall through with the drugs, not because we didn't agree with them, but we felt like God was saying, just wait, just wait. And a few months later, we were expecting Ethan. And then we had Madeline, our baby in heaven. And then we had Benjamin. And then we had Owen. And then we had Emma. And then we had Grace. Yeah. Just so you know, no more and thens. We're done with the and thens. I was reading what Daniel was writing for this morning, and he had misspelled trial throughout his paper. He had misspelled, and I was ready to correct him, and he had written trail instead of trial. And actually, God stopped me. And he said, that's no mistake. He said, trials, they are trails. And if you take them, they lead to something deeply beautiful.
I was working at Lowen Windows at the time. We started attending church here in Niverville at the MB Church, Fourth Avenue Bible Church, through a connection from Bible College, invited us to come there. And we never went to Providence, never saved up enough money to get there, get in the door. But after, I think, about 2 years at the church, the youth pastor that was working there at the time resigned, and they asked me if I would take the youth pastor position. And I said yes. And we served as youth pastor couple there for 6 years. And those were, again, very special years, very many fond memories. I remember collaborating with David sometimes at some of our youth events in towns and different things. And lots of energy and excitement when you're working with youth, and you get to see God do special things. There was also a combination of a lot of pressure that ministry brought and that I put on myself to build his church that was accompanied with those years. And again, the tensions that had rose up during our dating relationship between choosing between ministry and relationship with Christine began coming to the forefront again. I was trying to fulfill people's expectations, leading Bible studies, preaching, counseling, doing all the things that you do, and I often came home with very little energy left, feeling kind of spent. And that led to seeking to escape the pressure. You know how that circle goes. And whether it was golfing or computer games or pornography, different ways to try to escape. And that became part of what was going on. I remember sitting at the table, dinner table, so absorbed with a ministry problem or something else that, you know, I was present physically, but I wasn't present with the family. And they felt it, and I think they suffered from it. Christine went through a time of depression, especially in our later years of the youth pastoring, and I remember coming home late one night, and I was excited. There had been a spiritual breakthrough in a youth life, and just some exciting things that happened, and probably got home at midnight or something after a late youth night, and I went and I was going to tell Christine all about it and all that, and she just sat there, just staring out into space, and I think she actually said, I don't care. And that was never fully resolved. We had better times and worse times, but it was never fully resolved. That was kind of an underlying thing that was there. But we pushed on through, because that's what you do. You push on through. You get it done. And during our last couple years, as youth pastor, the church started going through a lot of turmoil. There were things that were going on inside, and three senior pastors left in short succession, one after another. And we started wondering, what are we going to do here? Is it time to get out? Is it time to leave? And at the same time, God started really ministering to our hearts. And what he was ministering to our hearts was surrender. Was surrender to him and his ways, and not our ways or what we could see. So we said, no, instead we're going to let our name stand for the senior pastor position and allow God to do what he wants to do. And so they had a vote, and they brought me in, the senior pastor, and we went at it with vigor. We were going to, you know, get this thing done, bring health to the church. And Christine was at home. She was homeschooling. I wrote this down, and I was going, whoa. Christine was homeschooling. She was leading Sunday school, teaching parenting classes, started the Niverville's MOPS program, sang on the worship team, and helping me with marriage counseling. She was doing all that. Crazy. I was doing everything a senior pastor does, including dealing with a lot of intense conflicts within the congregation. And it was kind of a Latvia experience. God, we cannot do this. And so the heart's cry started rising up. Lord, we desperately need you. We need more of you, Jesus. We need more of you, Holy Spirit, because this cannot be done. Mm-hmm. We were unable to function within the confines of the pastoral mold. It wasn't working. And it was during that time that I started connecting with a lot of you from here. Roger and Peter and David, we prayed together regularly, and I got a lot of support from here. Christine connected with a lot of you ladies through the MOPS program, and we built relationships. And there was such a deep desire in us, this hunger for more of Jesus, and he started to touch and change our lives and bring us to those deep places in our heart to see freedom, to see intimacy, to break through religion, you know. And I was religious, you know, in many ways. And so that started rising up, and I wanted that freedom for everyone. And I wanted to be vulnerable in front of people. I wanted them to be vulnerable. And I remember I'll say this first. That was received as an open door by many. and a breath of fresh air. And they said, yes, yes, but also was a threat to many. No, thank you. I don't want to go there. I got my protection system around my heart. Don't try to mess with that. So one night, Christina was away for the weekend, and it's a Saturday night, and I'm praying about what I'm supposed to speak about and share Sunday morning, and God tells me, I want you to share about your struggle with pornography. I go, oh, great. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. So I actually laid there and said, I'm going to die. I cannot do this. I didn't sleep. I just was laying there sweating. But his voice was persistent. This is what I want you to do. And I said, okay, Lord, you have my yes, but I'm going to lose my job. I'm going to be fired, and Christine's going to come home, and now what? So, without going into it, all I did, and I shared about my youth pastor years and the struggle I'd gone through, and it was amazing to see not just the response of people coming and knocking on the door and having hope in their own life for freedom because they could relate and it was real, but what God did in my heart, because there were no secrets anymore. There was nothing that could hold me down or the enemy could say, accuse, look, but you have this. I was just free. It was all out in the open. It was all in the light. And he was good enough. He was loving enough to care for me. And it didn't even matter what people thought anymore. And something just broke off of me, shed off of me during that time.
So towards the end of our time at the church, we were going through an evaluation in a congregational meeting. We were all sitting at round tables, and the ones that were not happy with the direction Daniel was taking were having the voice, and it broke me. They were not happy with the direction Daniel was going, and were not supportive, and were quite negative, and something came over me. I started to weep. And the meeting stopped, and it was quiet. And then my nose started bleeding. It was really pretty. Could not get that to stop. But you know, in that moment, I decided in my heart I did not need the church anymore. I loved the Lord. I was not turning my back on him, but I was done. I was done with church.
And let's just say it didn't go well to continue pastoring a church when your wife no longer was attending. Has its own share of struggles. And we knew we needed just some outside perspective. We needed some help and some people to speak into our life.
I just want to say one thing, too. In that time, actually, Daniel released me. He said, if you can't come, that's okay. And, yeah, there was such wisdom in that. So I just want to say that wasn't conflict between us. That was just, that's where I was at. Yeah.
So we went to a place called Oasis Retreat in Hope, BC. And wouldn't you know, once again, one of the core issues that came up while we were talking about counsel was my passion for the church and ministry, being a pastor, being needed by people, had become part of my identity and in an unhealthy way. And I didn't know when to let go.
And can I say something? I didn't know how to compete with that. That is like, that's God. Like, that's God's calling on his life. So I'm like, okay, but who am I to say, what about me, you know? So yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, when God has called you to something and you desperately want to serve him faithfully and you think you are building the church, you can get a little confused.
Yeah.
So I didn't know how to stop. And one of the things that really helped me see what was going on, we had a counselor by the name of John Radford, and he simply said these words to me. He said, Daniel, the church is Christ's bride, and Christine is your bride. You can trust them to take care of his bride. Now you go take care of yours.
I love that.
And that just brought so much clarity, so much freedom, so much release. And it became quite clear that it was time for us to let go and let God, mm-hmm. With the church. And we resigned in the spring of 2008. No intentions of staying around Niverville long term. This was our ticket. We were heading to, yeah, other grounds. But what we did not know at that time was that we were pregnant with Grace.
Yeah, I had become pregnant at this time, surprise, and I actually was quite concerned about carrying the baby to term. I actually didn't know that I could. And even caring for a fifth child after all the emotional turmoil we've been through. But in that place, God came near and he spoke and he said, you're going to have a girl and her name is going to be Grace. But I kept this to myself because I thought, well, maybe this is hopeful thinking. We have Emma, you know, maybe I'm hoping for a sister for her. And, but on June 10th, Grace was born. And also another layer of God's healing in our hearts.
We landed here on your doorstep that same spring of 2008. Actually, I and the kids landed here. Christine was not ready to come to church or set her foot in church. And we were here for a few months on our own. And eventually, she did join us. Mm-hmm. And this whole next part of the journey was definitely an outpouring of Grace being born in our lives. Actually, her name was supposed to be Sarah, but God changed it to Grace. And slowly, layer upon layer, God started ministering healing and life for us. And I'm just going to pause for a second. This isn't in my notes, but you who are here, you need to know that this place is a healing center, a place for ministering healing and life to broken people. It has always been, and it continues to be. And it's powerful, powerful. God is drawn to brokenness. So slowly, healing started happening, but it didn't happen the way we thought, and I've shared this when I spoke last time, and I'm not sharing it now again, but this was a season when literally everything that could go wrong did go wrong. There was not a sudden turnaround. I mean, it was like God was going to say, I'm removing everything in your life. Everything in your life. Until you start getting it. And our vehicles fell apart. Our house fell apart, like, epically. And there were deaths in the family. There was sickness. Like, everything went wrong. And it continued like that for about 8 months after I'd resigned from the church. And I felt like what God was saying. I wrote this. I said, now, by the way, don't think we went down without a fight. We shouted and we swore at times as God destroyed everything in front of our eyes. But we also learned to surrender, and to thank God for destroying the false securities in our life and replacing it with unshakable security in him. That's what he was doing. And about 3 years ago, some very significant things happened along that journey of healing, where we felt he was putting some some stakes down and saying, this chapter is coming to an end, and I'm bringing closure. And one of them was right here, right where we're sitting, but we weren't on chairs when we were sitting here. We were in a puddle on the floor weeping. It was the Awaken Conference, and the leader of the conference, I was up front here. I can't even remember what was going on. There was worship, there was ministry going on, and came to me and said, Daniel, I think what needs to happen now is that you speak a blessing over the Mennonites. And what I had not realized, maybe to the full extent, until right at that moment, was that I'd cursed the Mennonites in my heart. I didn't even realize it, just by little comments, by little things that had happened, by our experience. And But I, again, heard God's voice and said, yes, I'm going to do that. But I'm only going to do it if Christine does it with me. So she went down and she whispered into Christine's ear about what was going on. And Christine was sitting right there. I saw her eyes get as big as saucers. But I saw a humble and obedient spirit in her that just immediately said yes. And she tried to stand up. She couldn't even get out of her chair, and she couldn't even walk to the front. She just fell to the ground when she tried to get up, and I think Sveja and some other ladies helped her to get up front, and then we laid here, or sat here, and wept for 20 minutes while you guys watched us, some of you, and I couldn't get the words out. I tried and tried, but it just wouldn't come, and finally just was able to speak a blessing over the Mennonites. And then there was one more.
So, the flood. Many of you witnessed this. Maranatha was flooded. For those of you who don't know, flooded, and they had to redo the building in 2014. And 4th Avenue graciously opened their doors to Maranatha and said, come worship with us. And I said, fat chance. Not out loud. But this went on for several weeks. And the leadership from each of the churches took turns leading the services. So one Saturday, Daniel comes to me and goes, so I'm in charge of leading tomorrow. We're still at 4th Avenue. And I was upset. I looked at him and I said, okay, well, you're on your own. I did. I do not have, there's some just not so shining moments. I know we all have them. We all have them, right? But Daniel released me again, and he said, that's okay, but I need to do this. So the next morning, I got the kids up and I announced, we're going to IKEA. We're going to IKEA for breakfast. And they're like, isn't it Sunday? Like, isn't it church? Yeah, no, we're going to go to IKEA. We're going to go to IKEA. Won't this be fun? They all did not want to go. So Benjamin looks at me and he goes, hey, Mom, why don't you drop us off and then you go to IKEA? Well, that was unacceptable. And I actually had more dignity than that. So I jumped in the shower and God started speaking to me. And I think that even that act of getting in the shower was a step for God to go, okay, here we go. And he started revealing to me some things that I had harbored. against 4th Avenue. And he said, I want you to speak blessing over that church this morning. And I just started to weep. And I called Daniel and I said, this is what God's asking me to do. And he had totally the same. And so I said, I'm coming. I have no idea what I'm supposed to say, but I'm coming. And so we got to church, worship had started, and Daniel was sitting in the same spot in the church that we had sat in for all the years that we had been there. And for a minute, that rocked my boat. I wanted to run the other way. I was like, this is too much the same, too much. But God was reminding me, I have something for you to do. And I was just compelled to obey. During one of the worship songs, Daniel was leading worship. And Daniel Fuster. And one of the worship songs, Bonnie actually got up with flags that look like butterfly wings. Those are, you call them wings? Like, I don't flag, but they're gorgeous. They're beautiful. And as I watched her, I'm sitting there, and it brought me back to actually the identity cards that Rory initiated. Jackie had my card. And part of it was that you took the card of the person's picture, and then you wrote what you felt God was saying about that person. And I remember her coming, Jackie coming to me and saying, she was frustrated. She said, usually I have more words than this. Usually I have more to say. You know, God speaks more. But she said, all I have is you are my butterfly. And I actually carried that card with me in my purse for the whole year prior. And God reminded me daily of the cycle of a butterfly and the promise of freedom after the struggle. Jackie, you were right on. Right on. So Daniel, he invited me up to share. And I had no idea what I was going to say. And then it came. An apology for how I had prayed against the church, that the doors actually would be closed on the church. I spoke a blessing over the leadership and those that remained. I prayed that the doors would be open on the church. And in that moment and after, in my obedience, my heart and my eyes were opened. And God said, through all these things, I have been gently encouraging you to open your hands because it will release you and those you love.
I won't get into the what happened after, but there was healing. There were people released. There was restoration of relationships for us with people in the church, and just a lot of tears and a lot of hugging and good things. One of the things that probably was most precious to me, and I don't know if Benjamin and Owen remember this, but after that, we were just walking around the church. We went downstairs, we went upstairs, and they were like calves let out of the stall. They were running around. They were showing me, Dad, do you remember this? Do you remember when we did this? Do you remember this? Do you remember this? And there had been a release of the heart because we were no longer carrying those things. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like God was saying, it's done. Yeah. It's done. It's finished. I'm bringing you into something new, a new season. Someone said that when you experience closure, it's like you can look back and you can talk about what happened, but there's no longer the emotional triggers attached. And it was done. It was over.
Yeah.
There's only love left. There's nothing else. And even physically, God just did one thing after another of taking us to a new season. Even our physical move to Kleefeld, it was an opening of a new territory. It wasn't just physical, it was in our hearts. He was opening up something new and something beautiful. I remember coming home to Niverville after being on missions trips or being away on vacation or whatever, and I could just feel it closing in on me as I drove into town. It was like you could feel the heaviness. I don't feel like that anymore. It's gone. It's done. It's open. And part of what we've been learning, we want to wrap up, but is what Jackie talked about a few weeks ago, is that patient endurance in the journey. I don't know very much. I really don't. But he said, walk, act justly, love mercy, walk humbly with your God. That's it. Get out of the way. Let him build your church. And he'll do a beautiful and wonderful job as you go with him. And while we may not fully understand why some things are the way they are or go the way they go, I want you to know that we can live in confidence. You can live in confidence to know that absolutely nothing in your journey will be wasted. We were reading Hebrews 6 the other day, and it talks about an anchor to our soul. We were singing it this morning. We were singing the song about, it is well with my soul. You know, it's his promises, his unchanging character, that hope that we have, that anchors our soul. And when that anchor is secure, nothing else really matters. Yeah.
Yeah, so just to end with, there's a couple things. God kept bringing back those clenched fists of holding on, and I just felt like I wanted to pray over all of you. There are things we all are holding on to with tight fists, and sometimes it takes regular releasing, you know? And I've just seen the outflow of releasing those hands. And so I just want to pray over you. And if you feel comfortable, just actually clench your hands in front of you, because we all have something. We all have something that we're holding on to. God, we bring these hands to you. We bring these things that we hold on to so tightly. Our kids, our spouse, that struggle. God, we want to open our hands and release what's in those hands, God. God is never going to pry your hands open. And then he asks for us to lift one hand, just one hand. Keep it open. And he is going to fill to overflow that hand. All he needs is one hand. And you know it's not going to look like what you think. There's nothing you can do to make it happen. He's just going to do it. You just keep that hand open. You can trust him. He is always, always, always good. The last thing that God had asked of me, and man, this was a big one for me. There's a song that really spoke to just what we had, Amanda Cook's song that we had been speaking on. I thought, let's play the song at the end. And then as we were listening to it, God said, I want you to flag to that song. I'm not a flagger. I flag in my heart. I do. I love flaggers, but I flag in my heart. Or I use my arms, my hands. I have no idea how to flag. I was actually in the back with Rachel saying, how do you do it? Like, how do you? And actually, they're the flags that Bonnie flagged with the morning that I was able to bless Fourth Avenue. And so, Riley, you can start that song. And man, yeah, I'm going to get up here and do it.
Thank you.
Thank you.